Welcome back for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today, live from West Virginia University, a syndicated show that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practice. With our host this week, Matt Cummings. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Feeling frustrated here. Just as we're getting ready to go live, I had a little technical glitch, but so we're a minute or two late. I apologize to all those tuning in.
Better late than never, huh?
That's right.
Well, hey, it's good to be back with another informative episode of Marketing Communications Today from all of us here at West Virginia University. So not long ago, communications was a subcategory in PR. In the 80s and 90s, PR professionals spent their working hours on crisis communication, employee communications, shareholder communications, marketing communications, etc. These were very targeted and specialized forms of PR. But today, the profession has really evolved to the point that communications and PR is now part of integrated marketing communications. Or is it really integrated communications marketing? We're going to explore all of that during today's podcast. Our guest for it all is Marty Machowski, one of my faculty colleagues in WVU's IMC program and a communications and marketing professional. It's no coincidence that he lists communications there first. With expertise in technology, healthcare, corporate affairs, financial services, and crisis communications, Marty has supported a broad range of clients, including major brands such as GE, Logitech, Microsoft, Pfizer, AT&T, Samsung, Verizon, S&P, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and a number of startups. He has handled a range of corporate, thought leadership, marketing, and public policy issues, and he's worked extensively with CEOs, marketing and communications teams, investor relations groups, government relations offices, and corporate councils. Marty is currently president of 90 Degree Communications. With that introduction, it's time to thank Marty for joining us today. Marty, thank you.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, glad to have you. You know, in the intro, in our conversations as well leading up to today's show, one common theme that was mentioned often is change. And we just sort of described that change going back, looking at the 80s and 90s and how things have changed since then. How do you define this change, Marty? And what's changing? And what does this change really mean for communications and PR professionals?
Well, that's a good question to kick off with. You know, the one thing about change in our profession is that it is constant.
Right.
You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I remember the days when people, and I worked mostly on the agency side of the PR profession, and I remember the days when people would hire PR agencies to put out press releases for them, literally put out press releases, and contracts would specify the number of press releases that went out every month, the amount of time that would be spent writing those press releases, and that was what PR firms did, and that's how they made a lot of money. Today, as I was preparing for this, I was thumbing through the February issue of Strategies and Tactics. That's the publication of the Public Relations Society of America, and if anyone's listening who's in this space and doesn't subscribe to that, they certainly should. It's a great way to learn what your colleagues are doing and what are the trends in the profession.
Yeah,
but,
no doubt.
In the class I'm teaching this semester, we did a lesson on storytelling, the rise of storytelling, how storytelling differentiates from stories, not really the same thing. It's a more robust, immersive experience, etc. And I was thumbing through the issue of Strategies and Tactics, and I stumbled upon a story, the headline of which, Standing Out with Story Living. It is all about how the advent of augmented and virtual reality technologies are going to create even more immersive experiences, and we are no longer be hearing stories and imagining stories and following stories. We'll be living in stories. We will be immersed in stories. So that's obviously a couple of years down the road. Not everybody owns augmented reality glasses and those kinds of things, but that is just an indication of the constant change. Some of that is creative growth of the profession itself as people mm-hmm. come up with new ideas and new ways to address old challenges. But it's also, it's a function of how technology has changed, how expectations have changed, and also how the professions of marketing and communications, and I would even throw in advertising, have really sure. converged over the last decade or so.
You know, Marty, you mentioned there advertising. So how has the relationship now between advertising and PR changed too?
A couple of years, I guess about 10 years ago, there was a book written by Reese and Reese called The Fall of Advertising and the Rise of PR.
Yep.
And I remember when that book came out, and there was a striking wave of cheers coming up from the PR profession and a striking wave of groans coming up from the advertising profession, because it really hit at how people are spending resources. Advertising is still, if you look at company budgets, if you look at agency budgets, far greater than PR spend even today. But the notion that PR would become an equal with or go toe to toe with advertising as not only as a profession, but also as how people were spending resources was really quite dramatic. And PR agencies were quick to sort of jump on that and try to differentiate, using the old argument that public relations is more authentic. Public relations has a trusted filter. At that time, it was still largely the media that was filtering stories that the public read. Public relation was more genuine, and advertising was simply messages from a corporate brand or from an organizational brand that were right. less believable. So it's always been that sort of, they're friends, they're competitors. In many places, they were housed in the same agency. We saw on the business side of the equation how big advertising agencies bought up PR firms to be able to offer both of those services. But what's happening is that advertising and PR are becoming much more intertwined. It's rare today that I'm involved in a client account where part of what the PR team, ostensibly the PR team, is doing looks and smells just like advertising.
Sure.
It is, and that has emerged in the social space on Facebook, on Twitter, on other kinds of capabilities. But it's rare that you do a program that does not involve, again, a very traditional advertising feel, purchased space, purchased eyeballs.
Right.
For a message. And a long time ago in the old newspaper days, if you remember, there were things called advertorials where a company or an organization would purchase space on a newspaper's op-ed page mm-hmm. and have a piece there that was essentially an advertisement that looked like an op-ed story. So that there has always been the opportunity to purchase eyeballs in the advertising space, and that was even in the PR space. But now today, those professions, those tactics and strategies have sort of really melded. So they're beginning to look very differently. And you see it in some of the changes that are happening. There's, I hate to sort of keep referencing back to strategies and tactics, but there's a wonderful, their January edition was a wonderful set of articles on convergence and how things are converging particularly between the advertising and the communications model. So mm-hmm. that's really where the industry is going. The convergence model grew up, started in the advertising PR world, but the digital world has really created a platform for those things to occur together.
So let's stay on convergence for a little bit here. So what is PR's relationship now? We talked about PR and advertising, how they're different, how they're the same. But what is PR's relationship now to marketing in this new world?
Again, I think a lot of it is the same. Mm-hmm. The marketing message is a much more straightforward message than the than the PR message, the place in the traditional marketing sales funnel that we've all seen in various iterations. PR tends to be at the top. It's about recognition and awareness and interest and brand identity and the things that swirl at the top of the funnel. And right. Somewhere in the middle, marketing takes over and begins to introduce the potential for a transaction, for a sale, for a, in the context of public affairs, it's the opportunity for take action, to become an advocate on an issue. And then sales is obviously the closing of the deal. And interestingly, sales has always managed to sort of be its own separate sort of world over there, where people play differently, people are compensated differently, people are, they sit at the bottom of the funnel waiting for things to fall through, and have to sort of seal the deal, as it were. But between PR and marketing, the strategies and tactics are beginning to look very much alike.
Yeah.
And again, facilitated by the emergence of digital. Even in the traditional sense of PR and newspapers and magazines and television and radio, the delivery of that content has moved online. Mm-hmm. So that the newspaper story doesn't sit out there by itself, but it becomes something that's online. The newspaper story generates clicks, and it generates shares, and it generates all the things that we traditionally associate with digital marketing. But
right.
Those are the things that are generated by PR. It's interesting that I was talking to a reporter recently at the Washington Post, and we were talking to him about the value of exclusive stories. Mm. Whether it's, if I give you a story and 3 seconds later it's on another outlet,
right.
is the exclusive of value anymore? In the old days, you gave somebody an exclusive, they had it for hours, perhaps even a day, before
yeah.
the next outlet could report the story. Now it's literally seconds. Is that exclusive of value anymore? And he said, it's not as valuable from a news perspective, but it is valuable for bragging rights, and that's important still in that space.
Sure.
But what's really valuable about it is that it generates clicks and shares. The first story generates clicks and shares. And reporters today, certainly at higher level publications, perhaps even at more regional publications, are measured by the kind of digital activity they generate for the business of the newspaper. So when I click through a story or I share a story, there's eyeballs on the page, there's an opportunity to click through for ads. Those reporters are being judged on those metrics these days.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case before. You didn't know when you had a story in the newspaper how many people read it, or perhaps there was the very rough measure of letters to the editor or calls to the editor complaining about the story or commenting on the story. But today reporters are living in that world of clicks and shares and eyeballs. And so even their world is changing very much, becoming very much like a marketing world. And that has an impact on what they need, how as communications professionals we have to understand that and sort of help them take what information we'd like to share and mold it in such a way that generates the kind of feedback and return that works for them as well. So
yeah, that engagement is important not only for the reporter but also for the brand as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really important for that.
As communications and PR professionals, what do we need to do to flourish in this new environment that you describe?
Yeah. Well, that's a tough question. There's a lot of metric answers to that, but I think at the end of the day, we still have to deliver value. And the thing that we have to understand is that value is not defined by us. It's defined by, if you work for an agency, it's defined by your client. If you work inside of the corporate division, it's defined by any number of people, perhaps your colleagues in the C-suite, the marketing guy and the CEO. I'll give you an interesting example. In the course I'm teaching this semester, we did a lesson on CEOs as authors. And I had the opportunity to bring into that lesson a real-world example of a CEO that I worked with 2 years ago who authored a book. And I asked the class as part of this, what was the ROI from this book? What was the value to the organization? This CEO of a small tech company, not a brand that anyone who's listening would probably recognize, but a small tech company that's growing in the cybersecurity space, obviously a space that's exploding more generally. And the students in their discussion, and I haven't read the writing assignment for the week yet, that was just submitted last night, but we're torn between two kind of models of value. One was the traditional, more traditional ROI model of value that a marketer mm-hmm. might bring to mm-hmm. this sort of discussion. Leads generated, sales generated, that sort of thing. Can you measure clicks from an online review of the book, people who click through to the link to the company's website, and how did they navigate through the website to perhaps a marketing or sales information collection page or something like that? And there's other people in the class said, hey, let's take the CEO at his word, because I was able to do a Q&A with the CEO for the purposes of the class as to why he wrote the book, what he hoped to gain out of the book, what value he saw in the book, and let's measure it against what the CEO said. And if you measure it against that his definition of value, which was some visibility, which was something he could use for a talk track in conferences he appears at, when he talks to media, when he talks to potential prospects. He even said he used it as a business card. When he would meet somebody, he'd give him a copy of his book.
Sure.
Nobody has business cards anymore. It's a pretty good substitute. So from that perspective, from the add value perspective, the definition of value has to be not the practitioner's definition of value, I think, but the definition of value assigned by the owner, by the client, if you will. So it's an interesting challenge, how you deliver value in a world where you're sort of looking more and more like a marketer, more and more like an advertiser. But the value of PR, the value of a book, the value of a cover story for a CEO mm-hmm. in Forbes magazine or Fortune magazine is, you know, how do you put a dollar value? But the CEOs love it. They love right. it. Right. So it's deliver value, but understand that the definition of value is not your definition. It's your client or your CEO's definition.
That's an important point. I'm going to pause you right there. We're going to take a quick break now. We're going to come back and talk more about, we'll talk more about measurement, some of those necessary tools, and who will win out, the CMO or the CCO in this new world. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Just a quick break to remind you, the West Virginia University's online data marketing communications program is the first graduate program of its kind in the country, focusing on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University prepares you for your career by learning innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those we're featuring today. You can learn more at dmc.wvu.edu. Go there and find out more. And let's pick it back up with our last couple of minutes talking about PR and other sorts of topics.
Yes, sounds good. Thank you, Paul. And again, we're talking to Marty Machowski, president of 90 Degree Communications and a leading expert in PR, executive communications, corporate affairs, and a whole lot more. We're talking about, I paused you there. We were talking about ROI. Just wanted to ask again, you know, how can communications professionals demonstrate again that ROI on the activities that they are you know, that they are executing on?
Right. Well, the short answer is to go to Barcelona and see if you can just suck it up there.
Right.
The profession gathered there twice most recently in 2015 in Barcelona to develop, which is a great city, to develop the Barcelona Principles, which were an attempt to answer this fundamental question, which is how do you measure ROI for communications PR? What sort of resources do you need to do that? What metrics do you need to do that? And the thing I think that came out of that, the single most important thing that came out of that, was to stop using advertising equivalents. And it's still used, quite frankly, in the profession. Right. But it's because it's a serious number. But so AVEs and online impressions are still two numbers that are used in the profession. But the message out of Barcelona is stop using AVEs. And I think the communications profession is still having a difficult time with that. And I don't have a silver bullet answer for that one, but I will, because a lot of what communications and PR professionals do is the value of it is qualitative, not quantitative. Mm-hmm. It is, and I'll reference again the CEO profile in a major business publication or a company profile in either a trade magazine or a local regional publication. I did some work recently for a consumer tech company, not Apple or Microsoft, not at that level, but probably a company that people would recognize, a company that has reimagined itself a few times and changed its product set, a company that had a CEO crisis of financial management crisis a couple of years ago and really restructured the organization, brought in some new leadership, and the story that we were able to place was a story about that process and how the company has emerged and the new product lines it was involved in and that sort of thing. And that was extremely valuable. The people that it was extremely valuable for in this case were the board of directors and some of the institutional shareholders.
Right, right.
That was a very important. Now, that's a very well-defined audience.
Yeah.
And it is a very limited audience. I'm not sure how you apply a metric to that.
Sure.
Another client, and I'm trying to bring these real-world experiences to what I do, and when I teach the course, I told the students in the course that I come here as a practitioner, although I have some academic training, I'm not an academic.
Right. Actually, I did want to ask you, we have just under a minute here, and
okay.
I just wanted to ask you that one final question that
okay.
I teased coming out of the break. Who, looking forward in your crystal ball, who's going to prevail in that C-suite, the CCOs or the CMOs?
That's a good question. I did a recent survey on LinkedIn. There are roughly 60,000 people on LinkedIn who have CMO in a current or past title, and
yep.
There are about 5,000, only 5,000, who have CCO in their current or past title. So that tells you who's winning now.
Right, sure.
but I think if we would have looked 5 years ago, that 5,000 would have been even smaller.
Yeah.
So I think that, but the more important point is whether it's CCO or CMO, the things they do are going to look and feel the same. That
right.
same set of responsibilities is going to fall under that title. Excuse me, and it's going to be important for that person to live in the C-suite and to report to the CEO and to be an equal with CFO and the COO and all the other CXOs that companies have. So whichever title prevails, the skill set that communications and PR professionals bring and learn and deliver is going to be a key component of what that person does.
Great advice. Great insights. Thank you, Marty. And thank you for spending time with us today. And thank you for listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today from West Virginia University. I hope you found today's episode as informative as I have. Thanks again.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University. a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.